Welcome to the Science, Microbes, and Health podcast, covering emerging topics and challenges in the fields of probiotics, prebiotics, synbiotics, postbiotics, and fermented foods. This is the podcast of the International Scientific Association for Probiotics and Prebiotics, known as ISAP, a nonprofit scientific organization dedicated to advancing the science of these fields. Check us out at www.isapscience.org. I'm Dr. Mary Helen Sanders, ISAP's Executive Science Officer. I hope you enjoy this episode with your hosts from the ISAP Board of Directors, Professor Colin Hill and Professor Dan Tancredi.
Hello, everybody. My name's Colin Hill.
And I'm Dan Tancredi.
And today we're joined by Anisha Wijerasekara. Anisha is both a member of the board of ISAP, but she's also a researcher at the University of Reading in the UK. And she works in a very interesting space, which is metabolomics, which I find pretty scary. Tell us, Anisha, what is metabolomics and how did you get into this extraordinary field?
Not scary at all, Colin. So hopefully I can demystify that for you during this podcast. So I actually stumbled upon the field serendipitously when I was looking for a PhD project. My undergraduate degree was in biomedical sciences, so I learned a lot about omics technologies that were being used in biomedical sciences. And I actually did my research project on transcriptomics. So I was looking for a PhD in that sort of field. And then that's where I saw this position at Imperial, which was combining transcriptomics with this new omics that I'd never heard of before. And yeah, it basically took over my life at that point. And I discovered just how useful it is as an omics technology in terms of complementing other fields like transcriptomics. So yeah, I went into it not knowing anything about it or what it all meant. And now I see it as a very essential component of systems biology.
You've done some amazing work, Anisha. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between the transcriptomics and the metabolomics? You noted early in your research career that what comes after the transcription is kind of key in helping us get insights into what's going on.
That's right. I think most people generally have a good idea of what genomics is and how we inherit a set of instructions, but then that is transcribed into transcriptomics and then into proteins. And there's a field called proteomics, which covers that area. And it's the products of that metabolism, which is where metabolomics lies. And it's sometimes considered to be the end of the systems biology cascade. So it captures all the information on what's been encoded through your genes, but then also it captures information on lifestyle factors, which is not encoded in genomics information. So this is things like exposure to toxins or drugs, or certainly through the diet, and indeed our gut microbiota. These also contribute to our overall phenotype, which we can measure using metabolomics.
I liked how you showed in one of your studies when you compared different long-lived rodent models that the dietary restriction might be different than things that impact the genetics.
Absolutely. That was a really interesting study because it obviously with animal models, it gives us an opportunity to control the environment very well and also controlling for genetic factors as well. But what we could see is that with this dietary intervention, very stark change we could see in the metabolic profile of the mice. And many of the markers that we saw that characterized the change following the diet were indeed we could relate back to changes in the gut microbiota.
You mentioned that the gut microbiota is like the most metabolically active of the different microbiomes. Have you done research on other microbiomes in the human body?
I haven't myself, no, but I think that is an amazing area of research, which I hope future researchers will look into, this interaction between the different microbiotas in the body. I mean, I think people are starting to look at it now, but certainly things like interventions targeting the oral microbiota, you know, we can expect that to have an impact on the gut microbiota as well. So I think there is a lot of room for research in this area. It's fascinating.
And Anisha, can I take you back again to the methodology? So let's say you have a biological sample, and it could be anything, but let's imagine for the sake of this discussion that it's a fecal sample. And we're, as you said, we're well used to sequencing everything we can in those and getting the genetic or the genome, the metagenome of the microbiome. How do would you go about constructing a metabolic or about investigating the metabolome of, let's say, a fecal sample?
Yeah. So the key to metabolomic study is the study design. It's what your question is. What information do you expect to uncover from your samples? So if we are interested in the gut microbiota, you know, typically we would collect a stool sample to measure the composition of microbes, but we need to think about what information we would uncover from the stool sample in terms of its metabolites. So the function of stool, obviously to excrete waste products. So yes, there could be some useful information, which we do uncover, such as short-chain fatty acids, but then perhaps a more useful design of the study would be to collect a blood sample as well as your stool sample, so that you can measure as well what is circulating in the body to see that metabolic flux, especially in terms of dietary studies, what is being absorbed from food and recirculated in the body, as well as comparing to what's being excreted. So study design is really important when you're setting up your studies, because these different biological samples will give us different pieces of information. Some are complementary, and some perhaps we can measure the same things, so like short-chain fatty acids, but the interpretation is different.
The actual methods of extraction and analyzing these metabolites, how is that performed?
Yeah, so we've done a lot of work looking at different methods for preparing samples for metabolomics. Stool is quite a complicated biological sample to study just in terms of its composition. So what we typically do is we first make it into a slurry, and then we actually do a water extraction. So we extract metabolites from the stool sample into water so that we can measure it in an aqueous solution. And that procedure can be done for a number of other biological samples as well. Urine is an easier sample to analyze because it's already aqueous in nature, so it requires very little to no preparation. But essentially, yeah, with metabolomics, if it contains metabolites and we're able to prepare it into our tubes, then we can analyze it. And people have been analyzing a very wide variety of different sample matrices.
You've talked about the urine just now, and you've done some pretty interesting work with critically ill children. And as a professor of pediatrics, that is captivating to me, because I wonder how close you may be to being able to have fairly quick turnaround of the samples, whether they're urine or fecal or blood, to get some insight into the breakdown in the function of the gut, or just the bile acid metabolism and other things. Have you given thought to how you and your colleagues may be able to impact care of critically ill children?
Absolutely. So the pediatric critical illness study that you mentioned, Dan, is a study that was started a few years ago, and it started as a patient phenotyping journey study. So what we were interested in doing is, when the patient comes in, from their metabolic profile, are we able to identify biomarkers that can predict their outcome? So are there any early biomarkers that can inform on clinical decision-making? And it's been particularly useful in that context in a number of different clinical applications. And we could certainly see in our data the trajectory of a patient who was very ill compared to a patient who had mild disease. So this information will be useful to a clinician in seeing earlier on in their patient journey, perhaps we need to change our course of clinical intervention. So that's how that project started. But then as we learned more about how their metabolic profiles are altered during this hospital journey, we realized that actually they're the most exposed patient cohorts to antibiotics. And some of them stay in the hospital for a long time, so that changes their nutrition as well. So thinking about their gut microbiota, they're likely to have to experience a very severe impact on their gut microbiota as a cohort of patients. So that's what led into the exploratory study that we published where we characterized the differences in both the metabolic and microbial profiles of patients during their hospital stay. And what we identified were differences in both microbes and metabolites, which we can maybe use as targets for intervention to develop, say, a probiotic or a synbiotic dietary-based supplement that perhaps these patients could take alongside their clinical therapies during their hospital stay to help their recovery.
Yeah, that would be cool. It's amazing, like, you notice that the pre-existing conditions really didn't have much to do with what was going on with the critically ill kid. And then on the other hand, the time course of the illness, you didn't really see a whole lot of change because probably of the broad-spectrum antibiotics. But it was really interesting, and it would be very exciting if you can, you know, make that into something that could actually impact the care of children. I appreciate the work you're doing in that regard.
Thank you, Dan.
And Anisha, is it mainly the end products of metabolism that you're picking up on, or do you pick up on intermediates? Can you tell how these end products are being produced and thereby predict perhaps which microbes are or which human cells are even doing that metabolic process?
Yeah, absolutely, Colin. So this is where using different biological samples, it will give us different pieces of the jigsaw to help us to put that together. So certainly the metabolites that we would see in serum or plasma samples would be a reflection of what's circulating in the body at that moment in time when the sample was collected, whereas a urine or a stool sample would perhaps be more reflective of end products of metabolism. So if we're able to put all that information together and actually go back to our metabolic pathways and chart where these metabolites are that we're seeing in our results and almost kind of join the dots to see as one increases, does another one decrease, to give us information on pathway level changes that are happening. So not just individual metabolites that are changed, but actually what are the whole pathways that are affected? And then that gives us much more deeper insight into the mechanisms that are being impacted either by disease or by intervention.
Yeah, I think what metabolomics overcomes is I'm a microbiologist and we have this compulsion to name things and put them in boxes. So you have E. coli, Dan has lactobacillus, and I have clostridia, so we're all very different. But metabolomics could show us that, in fact, we have just different bugs doing the same things, making the same end product. So it's a bit kind of agnostic as to who's doing what, but it tells you what's being done. Is that a fair characterization?
Absolutely. And I think this is why it should go hand in hand with some of the more conventional approaches that are being used in this area, because measuring a change in composition, that gives you one piece of information. But if all of those bugs are doing the same thing, then actually that change is not really going to impact on the host at all. So that's why I think it is important to capture function as well as composition.
And from the little bit I've seen of metabolomics, we've dabbled a little bit. The readouts are incredibly complex. I mean, how many hundreds or even thousands of molecules are you capable of detecting in a metabolomic screen?
Yes, it is in those order of magnitude, hundreds or thousands of metabolites present in a biological sample. The metabolites that we can identify are limited to what we're able to identify. There's obviously a lot more that as yet have not been identified, especially dietary metabolites. So the community has made a start on trying to capture as much information on endogenous metabolism to start with, so that we can at least start to piece that together. Because the analytical technology that we use in metabolomics, it's very high resolution, high throughput analytical chemistry technologies, actually. So typically we use proton NMR spectroscopy, nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy, or we use mass spectrometry. And these generate huge data sets, which not just contain information on those hundreds or thousands of metabolites, but when you digitize that data, you get variables in the order of 50,000, 100,000 different variables. And those variables are further complicated in that they can be related to each other. So this is why kind of hand in hand with acquiring the data is understanding the informatics side to be able to process and interpret that data.
How do you overcome that problem of two different individuals measuring thousands of variables? How do you make any sense of it? Or maybe that's very simple, Dan, is it?
No, I mean, Anisha's papers are fun to read because she does some very elaborate procedures to try to reduce the complexity of that very large space into things that you can make a little bit more sense out of. Can you talk a little bit about your journey, Anisha? I know you started as a chemistry major, but you do some pretty amazing, you and your colleagues do some pretty amazing mathematics and bioinformatics.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did my undergraduate degree in biomedical sciences. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was in school, but I knew I loved science. So this was a pretty safe option. And I really enjoyed this degree because we studied different modules relating to biomedical science, and these were as diverse as immunology, physiology, microbiology. So I gained a really good insight into each of those different areas. And I did my research project on, it was a while ago now, on microarray technology. And that's really where I gained my first insight into omics. And I knew that it was something that I was very interested in, but I had no experience in the kind of computer science side. I didn't know how to handle these large data sets. So I did a master's degree in bioinformatics. And I very quickly realized that it wasn't for me because I wasn't a computer scientist at all. I was a biologist with an interest in informatics. So I knew that it wasn't an area that I wanted to go into. I wanted to work with samples and with people rather than just numbers. But I did my research project at Cancer Research UK, and that was my first insight really into research and academic research. And that's really what inspired me to search for PhD opportunities so that I could continue that passion for research. And I landed up back home in London at Imperial College to do my PhD. And that's where I learned all about metabolomics, and my project was focused on aging. So I did a lot of work looking at age-associated metabolic patterns. And then I stayed on to do a postdoc. And that was an amazing study to be involved in. It was a large-scale epidemiology study looking at blood pressure patterns globally. It's called the INTERMAP study. And with that, again, compared to similar to my PhD study, which was in an animal model, all of the markers that we were seeing were pointing to multiple mechanisms that were being altered in response to either disease or to intervention, including the co-metabolites from the gut microbiota. So that really sparked my fascination in what this is doing in our bodies.
And Anisha, if some people listening to this podcast may be, you know, working with prebiotics or probiotics, if I was to just be about to start up a human intervention with either pre or probiotics, what argument would you make to me that I should include metabolomics as a readout? And what could I learn from adding metabolomics as a readout, whether it's serum, urine, fecal, whichever?
So adding metabolomics to your intervention studies would provide you a really useful insight into what is changing at the molecular level that results in your outward clinical outcomes. So at the moment, you know, we have our clinical outcomes that we measure, which is normally our primary outcome. But if we want to know the mechanisms that result in that change and whether the gut microbiota was mediated that change, the data that metabolomics would uncover for you will show you all the molecular mechanisms that can contribute to the change in clinical outcomes that you might see. So in a way, it's almost like it's the bit in the middle. So you've got your intervention and then you've got your outcomes, and this is filling in the blanks in the middle. And as I said, I feel like the field is moving away from just composition studies to more capturing information on function as well as composition.
And are there metabolites that in and of themselves serve as biomarkers of health, so that just the very fact that you reduce or increase, I don't know how quantitative metabolomics always is, but if you reduce or increase a specific biomarker or set of biomarkers, could that be in and of itself a health readout?
Yes. So metabolomics is quantitative. So the data that we generate is a concentration value for different metabolites. That's what we're measuring. And absolutely, there have been quite a few metabolites that have been associated with health or with a positive outcome, especially in biotics sciences. So I'm thinking of short-chain fatty acids, which people focus on a lot to kind of demonstrate that the intervention has impacted on the gut microbiota, because we know that the microbiota play a key role in producing those metabolites. So similar to that, we're starting to look more into what else does the microbiota do in terms of identifying other markers of microbial function. So one area that has gained quite a lot of attention recently as well is bile acids. So again, we know that microbes play a key role in producing secondary bile acids, which circulate in our body. So bile acids are a fascinating class of molecule to study. So we know that our source of bile acids comes from our diet. It firstly is converted into primary bile acids, but then the microbes take those primary bile acids and convert them into secondary bile acids, which are then circulated throughout the body. So if we're interested to see how an intervention or how a disease might have affected the function of the gut microbiota, we could perhaps measure the bile acids, say, in a number of different biological fluids. We could measure it in the blood to see how what the levels are like circulating in the body compared to what's being excreted in the urine or the stool, to see whether there's been a change. And that's something that we saw in our pediatric critically ill study. We saw that there was a massive change in the production, a decrease in the production of secondary bile acids in our patient samples compared to control, indicating that that function was severely altered in the patients.
Are there other new technologies on the horizon that you think will be applied to metabolomic profiling? Or do you think these are sufficiently, these workhorses, if you like, are sufficiently good?
Yeah, so these analytical chemistry techniques are great because they enable high throughput acquisition of data, but also the capture of multiple metabolites in the same experiment from the same sample. There are absolutely other technologies that others are using, perhaps for different biological samples. So I've seen that people are using imaging approaches to look at biofilms, and another class of molecules relating to the gut microbiota that would be useful are things like bacteriocins, which are too large to be detected using these technologies. So you need proteomics approaches for that. So absolutely, I think we're building on furthering our understanding of these molecules.
Can you talk about some of the interesting work you've done with prebiotics, like including even characterizing how fat and sugar replacements may be impacted by the ways that the food industry may process foods, and also the implications that the prebiotics have for the health and functioning of the gut microbiota?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've done quite a bit of work on prebiotics. So again, others working in the field may have focused on the endpoints of fermentation, so focused on measuring the short-chain fatty acids. But with the technology that we're using in our lab, we also study the gut microbiota in vitro using laboratory human gut models. So we're able to combine those two techniques together to get almost like a real-time dynamic monitoring of microbial activity. So what we are able to show is when the prebiotics are introduced into the gut model, the intermediate metabolites such as formate or succinate that are produced pretty rapidly. And then we're able to observe the action of crossfeeding, because at the next time point, we didn't see those intermediate metabolites, but we saw the production of other metabolites, and that's where the short-chain fatty acids started to increase. So that dynamic monitoring was only possible using these kinds of analytical approaches. So that shed a lot of light for us on not just focusing on the end products, but also on the intermediates and how that is useful to inform on other factors going on, such as crossfeeding.
Nisha, this has been really fascinating, and thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. It's an area I think that we all need to be a lot more aware of, and how it can augment and support and inform any kind of intervention that we're doing at the microbial level or prebiotics, probiotics. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an amazing opportunity to share a bit more about this area with you, and hopefully we'll see more metabolomics in the future.
I'm sure we will.
Thank you, though.